Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Samsara sagare madnam dinam karunanidhe karmagrahara vidangam mamuddharam avahnava. Srimad Bhagavatakyo vayam pratyaksha krishna evahi sribatosi mayananda mukhyartam bhavasagare. Manorade madiyo vayam sabhanavadatvaya nirvigneiva kartavyam dasoham tamakeshavam. Bhave bhave yatha bhakti padayo savajayate tatha kurushva devesha nathastvam hoyata prabho. Nama sankirtanam yasya sarvabhava pranashanam pranamo dukha shavanam tam namami hariparam. जन्माद्यस्तयतो मया इतरदस् अर्थेष्वभिज्ञस्वरा तेने ब्रह्महृदाय आदिकवे मुह्यन्दियसूरया. तेजोवारिमृतम् यथा विनिमयो यत्र त्रिसर्गो वृषा धाम्नासेन सदा निरस्तगुहकम् सत्यम् परम् धीमहि. धर्मक्रोधितकैलवोत्रपरमो निर्मत्सराणाम् सदाम् वेद्यम् वास्तवमन्त्र वस्तुशिवलम् तावत्त्रयोन्मूलनम्. श्रीमद्भागवते महामुनिकृते किम्भावरेश्वर सद्यो हृद्यवयुध्यवेत्रकृतिः शुश्रूषुभीर्तक्षणा. निगमकल्पतरोगलितम् फलम् शुभमुखालवृतद्रवसंयुतम् विवर भागवलम् रसमालयम् भुरहो रसिका भुवि पावुकाः. सच्चिदानन्दरूपाय विशोत्पत्यादिहेतवे तावत्त्रयविनाशाय श्रीकृष्णाय वयम् नमः. यम् भद्रदन्दम् अनुभेदमवेदकृत्यम् विवर्भायनो विरहादयमजुहाव पुत्रेदयोतरोऽभिनेतु तम् सर्वभूतहृदयम् मुनीयानतोऽस्मि. यत्स्वानुभावमखिलश्रुतिसारमेकम् अव्यात्मजीवम् अतिशीर्षदाम् तमोऽन्धम् संसारिणाम् करुणयाः पुराणगुह्यम् तम् व्याससूर्यम् उपयामि गुरुम् मुनीनाम्. नारायणम् नमस्कृत्य नरम् जैव नरोत्तमम् देवीम् सरस्वतीम् व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरे. कमनीयविशोयमुद्धमूर्ते कलपेनुकुलिदादृदाञ्जनेन्दोः मम वाचि विजर्वरा मुरारे मधुरिकावि कावि कावि. नमोऽं विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसाय भूधरे श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिने. नमस्ते सरस्वति देवि गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषम् शून्यवादि भाषाध्यादेशदारिणे श्रीमद्गुरुचरणारविन्दाभ्याम् नमः. वन्दे नन्दव्रजस्त्रीणाम् पादरेणुमभीष्टश व्यासम् हरिगतोकीनम् पुनरिभुवनत्रयम् गोपीशरणारविन्दपरमाणवे नमः. पीताम्बरम् करविराजितचक्रशङ्खम् कौमोदकीसरसिजम् करुणासमुद्रम् राधासहायमरिसुन्दरमन्दहासम् वातालये शमरिशम् भावयामि. कोमलम् कूजयम् वेणुम् श्यामलोयम् कुमारः वेदवेद्यवरम् ब्रह्म भासदाम् पुरतो मम. मूकम् करोति वाचालम् पङ्गम् लङ्घयते गिरिम् യുവാഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമഃ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ വിലക്ഷണ സ്ഥൂല സൂക്ഷ്മാൻ ദേഹാലേക്ഷിതാസുദ യഥാർത്ഥോ ദാഹ്യോ ദാഹകോ പ്രകാശകാഹം. വിലക്ഷണ സ്ഥൂല സൂക്ഷ്മാൻ ദേഹാത് ആത്മേക്ഷിതാസുദ യഥാർത്ഥോ ദാഹ്യോ ദാഹകോന്യ പ്രകാശകാഹം. കൃഷ്ണ സേസ് ടു ഉദ്ധവാ ഇൻ ദിസ് ചാപ്റ്റർ ദാറ്റ് particularly reference to the soul, that is the important topic discussed in this chapter. And also you will notice here that Krishna has spoken to Uddhava in order to bring Uddhava purely on a spiritual level. The whole discussion is purely on a spiritual level. It's nothing to do with the matter is not concerned at all here. If you remember when we discussed Bhagavad Gita, there also Arjuna, after Arjuna had given up his bow and arrow, he put down his bow and arrow, Gandiva, and then he sat in the chariot, and it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, when it comes to that, says that Arjuna was in a confused state of mind. And Krishna started instructing Arjuna at that point. Prakasanniva Bharata. Krishna started smiling and started instructing Arjuna from then on. Prakasanniva Bharata, it says Krishna was smiling at that time. That smile has got a lot of meaning actually, because when Krishna sees the conditioned soul in this world suffering in ignorance, all Krishna can do is to instruct them that what is the right thing, which direction to go. Because as Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is above, beyond ignorance, though ignorance is touching Krishna, so therefore his instructions are beyond any defect. So Krishna says there, he spoke to Arjuna, and in second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, if you carefully look, you will see there that Krishna instructed knowledge to Arjuna first. That is in the known as Sankhyam, Sankhya Yogam. In fact, the second chapter of Prabhupada is titled as the Contents of Bhagavad Gita Summarized. Isn't it? That's the second chapter. So in the second chapter, Krishna instructed first absolute spiritual knowledge, purely in relationship with the spirit soul, about the soul. That's what, because Arjuna's ignorance was such, due to his association with the matter and all the hankering and lamentation, he spoke to Krishna. Krishna says to Arjuna that that although you are speaking like a learned person, that but actually you have no knowledge. The way you have, the things what you have spoken shows that you have no knowledge. So it was then that Krishna started instructing Arjuna, and the first thing Krishna spoke about was the importance of the soul. and to bring Krishna Arjuna to the spiritual platform. But there also, you will observe one thing, that as soon as Sanghyam was spoken, or the platform of knowledge of Brahma was spoken to Arjuna, Arjuna had little difficulty in understanding, and then Krishna spoke about karma, isn't it? Karma Yogam was spoken. So, Jnana Yogam and Karma Yogam, both were discussed in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Jnana Yogam and Karma Yogam was discussed in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. But then Arjuna got the doubt when Arjuna was thinking that if Krishna was stressing on Jnana, why does he push me to fight this war? This question came up in Arjuna's mind, isn't it? If Jnana, knowledge is so important, how come Krishna is stressing on karma? Why does he stress on me fighting this war? Which is a very genuine question from Arjuna. Strictly speaking, Krishna has spoken very highly about Jnana, about knowledge. And then he spoke about karma. So when he spoke about Jnana and karma, Arjuna wanted to know, is there somebody who, how does that person behave who have come to this level of realization? It is then that Krishna talked about Sthitapratnya. Sthitapratnya means one who has a steady intelligence, whose intelligence is fixed in the truth. So he spoke about the qualifications of a person, or a person who has come to that level of state of consciousness, how he behaves, how he acts, how he walks, how he sleeps, how he talks. So many things Krishna gave a detailed analysis of a personality who is on that platform. When Arjuna heard all these things, he got more confused. And in the third chapter, if you look, you will see there, Krishna talks about Arjuna questioned Krishna on two things. That's the first thing he spoke about. Why, first thing, talkim karmani ghoreva niyo jayasi keshava? Why are you engaging me in this heavy karma of fighting the war if the knowledge is so superior to karma? This is an important point. Krishna is stressing about spiritual knowledge. And if spiritual knowledge is so important, why are you pushing me to fight this war? Which is a very, very reasonable question from Arjuna's side. This was the first question Arjuna asked to Krishna. Because Arjuna could not understand that Krishna is speaking so highly about knowledge, transcendental life and spiritual life. Arjuna thinks that the best thing for him to do is to throw away everything, walk out from Kurukshetra and become a sannyasi and live somewhere in the Himalayas and practice this knowledge what Krishna has spoken about. This was going through Arjuna's mind. And when you are hearing Ekadasha Skandam also, at least some people may think that if it is all like this, what Ekadasha Skandam is talking about, how come, why should we go on doing all this work in this world, fighting, wasting time like this? Should I not be going in that direction? At least some of you may have thought in that way. It is quite natural. Because that is the beauty of the spiritual knowledge. Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam turns our mind to look into that direction very seriously. If you are reading Bhagavad Gita with an open mind and with a desire to have spiritual knowledge and spiritual life or spiritual advancement, whether it is Bhagavad Gita or Ekadasha Skandam, your mind will definitely think in that direction. And that is what has happened in many times in the past also. So that was the first question Arjuna asked to Krishna. That if knowledge is so superior to karma, why should I get involved in this karma? Secondly, what was the question? That
Vyamishraineva vakena buddhi mohaya sivami tadegam vada nishchitya yena shrayoham apnuyam.
This is the second verse. The first two verses in the third chapter. Vyamishraineva vakena. Vyamishraina means I am completely mixed up. You are saying one thing now and next is something else later. Because after talking about jnana, Krishna switches on to karma straight away and talks about karma yoga there, isn't it? So if karma, jnanam is so superior, and then you are talking about karma to me, I am getting confused, Arjuna said to Krishna. So, this is a problem. This, because this problem will come to everybody. When you are studying Bhagavad Gita seriously, this question will definitely come up in the mind. So that's why in the third chapter, Krishna started answering, going back a lot in the history behind. He begins from there. How to understand that question, the answer to that, you have to go back in the history quite a bit. A lot before then, Krishna's appearance in this world. So how did Krishna answer that question? If you look into Bhagavad Gita, you will see. Krishna says, Logesmin Divida Prashta Pura Logesmin Divida Nishta Pura Proktam Mayanaka Jnana Yogena Sankhyanam Karma Yogena Yoginam. Krishna says that to Arjuna, Logesmin Divida Nishta. Actually, Krishna says there are only two paths in the Vedas. Vedic literature talks about only two paths. Divida Nishta. Two kinds of Nishta. Nishta means the your spiritual steady practices. That is Nishta. Steady in your practice and do executing it in a very steady way. That's Nishta. So, Logesmin Divida Nishta. From time immemorial, there's only two Nishtas. Puya Prokta Mayanatha. Addressing Arjuna as Anatha, one who has not committed any sinful things. Each of that Krishna's words are very significant in the Bhagavad Gita. Only you have to think through it. Why Krishna used that specific word Anatha? Anatha means one who is sinless. One who has not committed any sinful activities. Actually, the soul does not commit any sinful activity. So, first thing Krishna wanted to remind Arjuna by calling Anatha, is that you are spirit soul. These sinful activities and all is coming from the mind and body and other things. But if you have moved up to the spiritual platform, these sinful activities and all such things has no impact on it. So Krishna is saying there, Logesmin Dividanishta Puya Prokta Mayanaka, then Jnana Yogena Sanghyanam Karma Yogena Yoginam. He says, there were two classes of people from the very beginning. One, Jnana Yogena Sanghyanam, who will follow the path of Jnana Yogam, and Karma Yogena Yoginam, Karma Yogis who will execute the Karma Yoga. So, these two classes existed all the time. All the time they existed. Jnana Yogena Sanghyanam, Karma Yogena Yoginam. Either people will be in that Jnana Yoga category, or people will be in the Karma Yoga category. This is from time immemorial, Krishna says, it's been like that. There is no change to it. So, if you look into creation, you will find there, when Brahma started creation also, he started in the same way. He started creating first the Kumaras, the four Kumaras. They were in the first category, Jnana Yoga. They followed Jnana Yoga. And then he created another group of people called Prajapati. Prajapati is, if you know, Marizi, Atri, Angiras, Pulastyan, Pulahan, Kradu, Bhrigu, Vasishtha, Dakshan, and eventually Narada Maharshi also in that. In that group, you will see the Prajapati's group, they all took to the Karma Margam. The Kumaras took to the Jnana Margam, and the Prajapatis took to the Karma Margam. So right from creation itself, Brahma's creation itself is like that. That's what Krishna is referring to. Logesmin Divida Nishta Pura Prokta Mayanaka Jnana Yogena Sankhyanam Karma Yogena Yoginam. In other words, from time immemorial, from creation, it is like that. There is this path, who people who follow the path of Jnanam, and there is another group of people who follow the path of Karma. Because it is like that, Krishna was saying that the Jnana Yoga, the process of Jnanam, is very, very difficult path. It's very difficult path. So therefore, among millions, you will find hardly one or two have that qualification to follow that route. It is absolutely clear that thing. For example, A person generally, a person who executes Yanavarkam in this world, you will notice in that person, he brings with him a lot of that vasana from his previous life to go in that direction straight away. Nothing in this world will come on his path. There are many, many examples like that. So, therefore, Jnana Yogam is for those people who have developed that, executed and developed their qualifications for Jnana Margam. There are so many qualifications to follow the process of Jnana. Like the four Kumaras case, there are many things mentioned. So one who has got that qualification, only such a person can fall into the process of Jnana. It is not possible for ordinary people to execute Jnana Margam. So, from there, you can see that Jnana Margam is a very exclusive thing. It's a very exclusive thing. Ordinary people, like all of us here, will find it very, very difficult. Of course, when you hear the Jnanam, what is discussed in the Ekadasha Skandam and in the Bhagavad Gita also, the last six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, as well as in the Ekadasha Skandam is Jnanam. It's a lot of it is Jnana Margam. As we discuss, you keep realizing that, well, it's not possible for me. That realization will easily come to anyone who is studying it seriously. If you hear it like katha and leave it, then there is nothing, there is no worry about it. But if you start thinking about it and see the practical application or practical, how to execute it practically in life, then you can see the difficulty of jnana, the process of jnana margam. It is not easy and it's not for everybody. So when we read Ekadasha Skandam, we should keep this in our mind that Jnana Margam is not for everybody. It is only for very, very, very few selected people who have executed spiritual life perhaps many lifetimes before and have already come to that state of mind that they can accept and have that determination and strength to progress in that direction. So Krishna said there, Jnana Yogena Sanghyanam Karma Yogena Yoginam. And the same thing you will notice also, the people who executed Jnana Margam generally are the sannyasis, are in the sannyasi stage. And people who executed the Karma Margam are the grahastas. Grahastha will be in the mostly in the Karma Margam and sannyasi should be in the Jnana Margam. Therefore it is said, Jnanam Sannyasa Lakshanam. Knowledge is what makes a sannyasi. And if he has that knowledge, then he is qualified to be a sannyasi, who is in that spiritual consciousness. So, so there, we have seen there, that, that the two processes, and how from time immemorial, this has been a part of the life in this world. For example, when Arjuna heard Bhagavad Gita from Krishna, he had to fight this war in Kurukshetra against the Kauravas, isn't it? So when Arjuna had to fight, his fighting had become a sacrifice, a yajnam, to please Krishna, isn't it? Krishna, by speaking Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, was able to change his understanding of life, and his karma in the form of the war has turned into a yajnam, a sacrifice for Krishna. And that by fighting the war, Arjuna made the progress in spiritual life. On the other hand, Daksha Prajapati, if you remember in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we talked about Daksha, isn't it? So this Daksha Prajapati, who was performing a sacrifice or a yajnam, that turned out to be a war the other way. You can see the difference, how the consciousness makes the whole thing change. So without knowledge, if you do anything, this is what will happen. Arjuna, because he was clearly instructed by Krishna, even though he had to fight a war, the war becomes a yajnam, a sacrifice. On the other hand, because Daksha Prajapati was blind, had no knowledge, but was executing a sacrifice or a yajnam, it turns out to be a war at the end. You know what happened in that story with Daksha. Daksha Prajapati's pride and arrogance resulted in offending Lord Shiva, and eventually Lord Shiva got upset. Sri Parvati came and Sri Parvati gave up her body. Sri Parvati was Daksha's daughter, and she gave up her body there, and eventually Shiva destroyed the whole sacrifice, and it was a disaster altogether. Supposed to be a great sacrifice, and it ended up in a big war at the end. Shiva's followers and Daksha's followers, they started fighting, and that's whole fourth chapter, first six chapters in the fourth canto, you can read that. We'll not go back to that now. But if you think through this, you can see how Arjuna, because he was instructed by Krishna, he was able to convert a war into a sacrifice. And Daksha, on the other hand, he could, because there was no knowledge inside, he converted a war into a sacrifice into a war. So these two things are worth remembering here. So similarly, when we talk about jnanam and karmam also, without knowledge, anything activity is done in this world, in spiritual life also, it can lead into difficulties. That is why, even if one cannot completely follow Ekadasha Skandham, just by hearing about it, it will develop some vasanas inside, in the right direction. This is the beauty of Ekadasha. Nobody expects that by after hearing Ekadasha, you are going to practically implement that in life. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. But the beauty of Ekadasha Skandham is, by hearing, simply by hearing, if it generates some thoughts inside about the soul, and also develops a certain understanding of spiritual life within a person, that itself is a success. Because majority of the people will not be able to follow Jnana Marga. It is not possible. That is the most important thing. Everyone will find it very, very difficult. But because Ekadasha Skandham has got this capability of generating such nice thoughts inside about the self, therefore it has to be heard. It should not be kept away. Now, when it comes to yoga system, for example, Ashtanga Yoga, the system of Kundalini and all that, Kundalini Chakram and raising the Kundalini to Sahasrara Padmam through the different chakras and all that Ashtanga Yoga system. This Ashtanga Yoga, one should not take to it. It is very strictly forbidden. Unless one has the perfect teacher who can help the student. Otherwise it will create complications in life. So therefore it is said that it should not be spoken. Ashtanga Yoga should not be taught. If somebody is teaching, it's purely a business. There's nothing more than that. There's no other goal than that. But Jnana Margam, although it is difficult to practice, it cannot do any damage to anyone. The only thing it will do, the good thing it will create is, it will create some good vasanas inside to think in that direction. Even if one may not succeed in practicing it in daily life. Because once you start realizing that what Krishna has spoken in the Ekadasha Skandham, and when you start putting it into practice, you will see the difficulty. How far we can, within seconds, it's gone completely. We are lost. That is why everything in the Vedic tradition is based on the qualification of the person. It's not that you put everyone into one package and send it through. No. There is a category is created for people on different levels. Everyone should progress in the spiritual path. Therefore, Krishna spoke about Karma Yoga. This is how Karma Yoga comes in the Bhagavad Gita. So when Karma Yoga, because Krishna says there, if Karma Yoga is executed properly one day, he will develop that purity within the heart to understand, and that control of mind, control of senses, what is needed for preparing for jnana, for the knowledge side. Now then the question will ask, where is bhakti then, isn't it? Because that's what we are all claiming ourselves to be. So the bhakti is for a jnani and for a karma yogi also, bhakti is required. Without the help of bhakti, either in jnana margam or karma margam, it's impossible to progress in either way. But interesting thing to note here is, When Krishna spoke about this in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna begins with jnanam and karmam only in the third chapter. Jnana yogena sanghyanam, karma yogena yoginam. Krishna says, Logesmin dvivida nishta purya prokta vayanaka. Jnana yogena sanghyanam, karma yogena yoginam. So, from time immemorial, these were the two processes, jnanam and karma. But in due course of time, the people who pursued the path of jnanam got reduced. Because it's a very difficult process, and more karma yoga became prominent in that way. So, and in order to prove that point, Krishna also said many things in the Kama Yogam chapter, worthwhile reading Kama Yogam properly. Nahi kaschilkshanam abhi jadu dishtatya karma kra kaiyade avashak karma sarva pradhajayar gunaihi. The reason why we can't go into Jnana Yogam is that what verse is saying. The verse is saying, nahi kaschilkshanam abhi jadu dishtatya karma kra. By nature itself, human body and human nature is such, jadu tishtati akarmakral, he cannot stay without doing anything. This is the way our body is, our mind is like that. So, nahi kashya kshanavavi, not even a second, he can stay without executing karma. That's very nature. Then, karyade avashak karma sarva pragrajaya gunehi, that because of the association with the three modes of nature, he will be forced to act. And because Krishna understood this situation with Arjuna, when Arjuna started taking up sannyas and walking away from the field, from the battlefield, Krishna says to Arjuna, you will never be able to walk away from here because your nature won't allow you to give it away, give it up. You will be forced to fight. And it is then, you see, initially Arjuna made a decision, I'm not going to fight, isn't it? That was his decision. And he left the bow and the arrow and he sat there. So, fully decided, I'm not going to fight this war, because he saw all the personalities who were in the battlefield, and he made up his mind. What did Krishna do at that point? The first thing Krishna did was, when somebody makes up a decision like that, first thing you have to create is a doubt in his mind. And that's what Krishna did straight away. Krishna's first few verses, if you look in the second chapter, you will see that the way he put it to Arjuna was that Arjuna started doubting about his own decision, the decision he has made, whether it was correct or not. So, immediately after that, Arjuna could see that there is some problem with my decision. So, the first thing when you find somebody who has made a definite decision about something, and if you find that he's not willing to change his mind, the immediate thing, if you are talking to them, first thing you have to do is to create a doubt in their mind about their decision. And that's what, it is a simple psychology behind it. Krishna, that's what Krishna has done there. That unless you have a doubt about your own decision, what you have made, you are not going to think about it, isn't it? So Krishna created that doubt in his mind, and you can see how that caused all, as soon as the doubt developed inside, Arjuna changed his thinking. So it is at that time Krishna is saying to him, nahi kaschil, think about this Arjuna, nahi kaschil kshanamavi jadu tishtatya karma kro. Not even a second anyone can stay without doing anything. Then, karyade avashak karma. Karma is a part of you. And sarva prajajayar gunaihi. That everything is controlled by the three modes of material nature. So immediately Arjuna started thinking also, it looks like that to me also that I may not be able to stick to my own decision. These thoughts have come to Arjuna very strongly. But if you go back into the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will glorify karma there. Will glorify a lot about karma. But just because Krishna has glorified karma there, Krishna's intention was not to keep us in karma all the time. That also you have to remember. Why Karma Yoga was spoken was, sometime in the Shastram there is a thing called Athavadam. Athavadam means, suppose you want, with a good intention, you can glorify something. Because you are doing it with some good intention. And if you do that, what will happen? The person who is receiving the instructions will actually take it a bit seriously. So in order to encourage people to take things seriously, sometimes this thing called Arthavadam is there in the Shastra. The only intention behind it is that you glorify something or exaggerate it more than what it is and gives the impression that this is it, I got it now. So you will stick with it. And similarly, karma is glorified like that in the Bhagavad Gita. There is no doubt about that. Why? Because if you don't talk about karma in that way, Arjuna will not take to it. So not induce Arjuna. But if you start thinking about, oh, this karma yoga is the only thing in life, and this is the final goal in life, and this is what's going to get to the spirit, to get yourself free from the cycle of birth and death, then it is a mistake. Then it's a mistake. And in the time when the independence movement was going on in India, many, many political leaders, they started stressing on karma yoga. They started stressing on karma yoga. Mahatma Gandhi, Bal Gangadhar Tilak, Gopalkrishna Gokhale, and so many big, big leaders. They were stressing on this karma yoga aspect of it because they all have made great sacrifices in their fight for independence. And in order to support their position, from their understanding of Bhagavad Gita, they brought out this point that this sacrifice for the sake of the, they were not people with any selfish motives. They had a great desire for sacrificing for the purpose of the, although it was for independence movement and all that, but still the sacrificing mood was very strong in them. So Karma Yoga was taken very seriously by them. And many people misunderstood that this is the way, and they started talking about Karma Yoga, completely gave up everything else. But Shastra don't approve it completely. That you have to go back to the Acharyas, what they say about it, who are much more advanced in knowledge on the Shastram. They are saying Karma Yoga can bring you up to a point, and it is necessary also for everybody to execute Karma Yoga. When Karma Yoga purifies a person, and elevates himself, or purity of heart develops in a person, then he is qualified for this Jnana Yoga, what we are discussing in Ekadasham and in the later chapters of Bhagavad Gita. It is not possible otherwise. That's why Karma Yoga has a role to play, but that has to elevate oneself to inquire after the truth. So that's what the reason behind it. Now, even if you take Karma Yoga, for example, this is the most interesting thing. We are people who can't even execute Karma Yoga. Isn't it? This is known, but everybody knows that. Because what are the important things in Karma Yoga? Karma Yoga means giving up the results first. Not accept working for the results. That's the first qualification. Secondly, to give up that I am the doer concept from one's own mind. I am the doer, I am the enjoyer. Both has to go. So in other words, to serve in this world others with the desire for, not for desiring anything or any results, and not for with the understanding that I am not the doer, is a very advanced stage in Karma Yoga. We are people who have not even reached that stage. We are people who wants everything to be accounted properly for everything what we do. So when we talk about Karma Yoga, there are also different levels in there in Karma Yoga. Also there are different stages. Some people who are very advanced in Karma Yoga, they may be probably able to do it in that level of I am not the doer and I am not the enjoyer stage. That can happen. But those who have not even reached that stage, who have started to do a little bit in their life in the form of Karma Yoga, that means even in the Karma Yoga they are not fixed up. So the question will come, is there any point in talking to them about Jnana Yoga? Isn't it? Because if you are not even steady in the path of Karma Yoga, where is the benefit of discussing Jnana Yoga with such people? Acharya says, yes, you should discuss. Because, as I mentioned before, everything happens in life, not in 1 second. As much as we progress in the path of karma also, although we may be in that lower levels of Karma Yoga, we may be in the lower levels of Karma Yoga, still, by hearing about the glories of the soul and the glories of the truth, those will develop certain tendencies or vasanas inside, which in due course will develop our spiritual life, will influence our spiritual life. These things are very, very unknown factors. You see, we always think everything has to come from outside, isn't it? That's how we think about life. Sometimes we say that association with people makes us good and bad. It is true to an extent to say that, that association with good people and bad people makes us good or bad. But Bhagavad Gita does not completely go with that idea. If you have thought about Bhagavad Gita, you will see there. The verses what Krishna says to Arjuna is this. Suppose you have brought with you some strong vasanas in you in previous lifetime. Whatever vasanas we have created inside, Krishna says the danger is coming from there, not from outside. We always think the danger is outside, but the danger is actually inside. That's why when he talked, Krishna talked about this. Dhyayato vishaya pamsan sangasteshu vajayate. Sangal sanjayade kaman, kamal krodho vijayade. Krodhal bhavadi samoha, samohal smadhi brahma, smadhi brahmshal buddhinasho, buddhinashal pranashari. When does a person fall down? Krishna says there. That dhyayato vishaya pamsan. He had some strong vasanas inside which he has created before from his different activities. And these vasanas have stayed inside strongly. And sometimes those vasanas came up and he started meditating on them. That's what dhyanam. Dhyanam means meditation. So the problem begins at that point. When the meditation starts on your vasanas, whatever vasanas, because vasanas means what? Vasanas is the one that is influencing the mind. All our thoughts are based on the vasanas that's coming from inside. So, dhyayato vishaya pumsan, when vishayam or sense gratification, if we have experienced a lot of sense gratification, even in this life or in previous lifetimes, those vasanas will always come up inside. That is where we start the meditation. Isn't it? Anything what we have enjoyed in our senses, that is why in Vedic literature they are talking about restricting sense enjoyment for this reason only. It's not that sense enjoyment itself is the problem. Because it will create the vasanas inside and you will start meditating on them, the enjoyment you had. For example, it's said that many times, because in the youth, people don't have that. These things nobody thinks these days, isn't it? No, yeah, whatever suits me, I do it. Did you enjoy it? The people ask this question. The very question itself is dangerous, actually. But then we don't know what to reply when they start asking this. If you say you're not enjoyed it, then there is something wrong with you. So, but then the subtle problem with this is, dhyayato vishaya pumsan, that you will, if you enjoy senses, that sense enjoyment will stay as vasana. And that vasana, you will start meditating on that. Isn't it? Dhyayato vishaya pumsan. What happens then? Krishna says the next thing. Sangasteshu vajayate. That sangam, attachment will develop. So, once the attachment develops, Krishna is saying, sangal sanjayate kaman. Then, as soon as you have attachment to something, next thing what you want is to have it again. That enjoyment, what you experienced before, you want to have it again. So, sangal sanjayate kaman, and when kamam or desire has not fulfilled what you want, then immediate thing what next happens is kamal krodho vijayate, anger develops inside. You can see that even among children, in very early age, this develops easily. Without any external influences, this comes from inside. This understanding, this problem inside. Actually, you see, people who have understood this psychology, they are the people who make all these big, big advertisements. What they are doing through the advertisement is, they throw at you some idea, and it goes in, and then you start meditating. That's all they want you to do. They just want you to meditate on what they have shown on their billboards, or television, or any other media. So, if they have succeeded in that, and you started thinking, you are in trouble. That's all you have to do. You just have to think about it. It starts from there. So you can see, Dhyayo Vishaya Pumsan Sangasteshu Vajayate, Sangal Sanjayate Kaman, Kamal Krokobi Jayate. Krishna says step by step how it starts working inside. So the whole process is going on inside. So instead of thinking about Srimad Bhagavatam, we think about all this sense gratification, how we can enjoy it and how enjoyed it in the past and how we can do it again. All this kind of churning will go on inside. Just like sometimes you go with children for shopping and in the shops they show many, many things and children out of their desire to have it, they will demand for it, isn't it? They will say, oh, it's nice to have that. And without thinking about it, something either he has seen in the television or in the media somewhere, and he saw it in the display, in the shops, immediately that dhyanam which has started from the television has developed into a vasana by the time he has seen this object of acquiring it. So that's what it is called. And if you deny that, tell him that, oh, you don't need it, or you don't have it, he gets angry immediately, isn't it? The children protest, why can't I have it? That question comes from them. So this is the way, this you can see from the childhood itself, how this thing, what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita works. So, Dhyayo Vishaya Pumsan Sangasteshu Vajayate, Sangal Sanjayate Kaman, Kamal Krodhobi Jayate. Krodhal Bhavadi Samoha. From Krodham, when Krodham comes, what happens? Krishna says Samoham. Delusion comes to a person. Samoha Smriti Vibhrama. Smriti Vibhrama means that he forgets what he is. His own identity is completely gone by then. He's completely fallen into the material platform. Buddhinasham will follow. He loses his intelligence immediately after that. And Pranashari, he falls down. So, this is the way Krishna talked about this in the Bhagavad Gita. What we have to remember is that although people tell us association is important, which we associate with, because association with good people develops good vasanas inside. More powerful than that is the vasanas what we have brought with us from our previous lifetimes, previous sense enjoyment, or even in this lifetime, how much we have absorbed in sense enjoyment. And this is the reason when one comes to spiritual life, the first thing is spoken is about sense enjoyment, to restrict the sense enjoyment. Only for this reason, not to create more vasanas inside. So, we were talking about vilakshanasthula sushmal dehalalmekshina asodre. So, about the soul. Almava, ikshinava, sudraka. All these things. Soul is ikshinava and sudra. Soul is seeing and soul is experiencing as one. So, we also saw, last time we were talking about this, that if it is something new, which has to come from outside, then it can leave you also later. Important point is, he's already there inside. Only thing we have to recognize it, that he's already there. The soul is already there inside. And the nature of the soul, we have studied from the Shastra we hear, although we don't know yet. The nature of the soul is, it is omniscient, it is full of knowledge, and it is Saravyavakam. It has got the ability to spread everywhere, permeate in everything. And all powerful. That's the nature of the soul. And nothing affects the soul. If it is all like that, how come we are not feeling it today? If we say that the soul is inside, now we have to go back to the very basic questions. We are saying the soul is inside. Fine. At least Shastram is telling us. We don't know whether there is a soul. Like even now people are asking, is there a thing called a soul? They are asking. Leave that behind. Let's think it like this way, that if the soul is inside, and Shastram is also telling us the nature of the soul is like this, that it is powerful, and it is full of knowledge, full of bliss, it's eternal. Isn't it? Satya Chitta Anandam, Sachidanandam. As we say, the nature of the soul is. So why we are not seeing that? Why can't we experience that, at least a bit of it? This question will come, isn't it? The answer to that is that although the soul is present inside, And although all these qualities mentioned about the soul do exist, because these things called the mind and the prana, the energy, they are completely given a different twist to the whole thing. It has covered up the soul in such a way through its subtle body and the prana that we are unable to connect with the soul, but always connected with the mind and the intelligence and the other other things in the body and in the body itself. So this situation is what we have to get out from. This is our problem. That soul is inside, and soul has got all the qualities of the eternity, blissful knowledge, but in reality nothing is experienced. And the reason being that the mind, the mind, the intelligence, the senses, the body, and the whole subtle activities inside is making us to experience as though they are the reality, not the soul. This is where the problem is beginning from. So, we were discussing this, and when we talked about, we saw that, we saw two things. That the first thing was that the Krishna was, sorry, Sudeva Goswami was saying to Parikshit Maharaj that Bhakti Jalsmana Bhakti Yoga. That's where we stopped last Sunday, isn't it? Muktim dadahi kahijil smana bhakti yoga. That was from the canto, it was from the canto, sixth chapter. So there, we have to look at it again a little bit more, because that's where you find some important thing. You will only get tips of these things from different personalities when they are spoken about it, or when Sukadeva Goswami refers to it in the Bhagavatam. Because these subtle topics in the Bhagavatam will not be spoken in depth. Whenever a great personality like Rishabhadev, when Rishabhadev was leaving the body, that was an opportunity for Sukadeva Goswami to talk about it. So he mentioned immediately to Parikshit. We can notice that in that sixth chapter. Sixth chapter, let's look at that. Krishna says there, he says that he says here, Rajan Padur Gurudalam Gurudalam Bhavadam Yadunam Devam Priyakulavadi Kodakingarova Astu Yamamanga Bhagavan Bhajatam Mukundo Muktim Dadadi Karhijil Smana Bhakti Yogam. My dear King, Sudeva Goswami is saying to Parikshit that Krishna has for you and the Pandavas, referring to Parikshit and the Pandavas, and for the Yadavas, Krishna has been their protector, advisor, and also the friend and controller. And not only that, he has taken different roles to help you in this world. And therefore, Krishna by nature is Astuyamanga Bhagavan Bhajanam Mukundam, that one who offers respects to Krishna and serves him, Muktim Dadadi, he gives mukti, liberation to them. Karhi chil smana bhakti yogam, but he will offer mukti to him, but never bhakti. He won't easily offer bhakti to everyone. He is very, very selective on that. He will offer liberation to them. Muktim dadahi karhijil smana bhakti yogam. Bhakti yogam, Krishna thinks a lot before he offers bhakti to anybody. Does that mean, when you read that, you may get the impression, does that mean that after mukti, I'll be sitting in front of a deity with a few flowers, offering the flowers and the arati and all? No, this is not what it means. This bhakti what Krishna is talking about is spoken in the next verse. He says, then we are talking about Rishabhadev. He says here, Nityani Bhudani Jalaba Nivurta Krishna Shrayasya Drajanaya Chirasutta Buddhehe Logasaya Karnaya Abhayamatma Loga Akhyanamo Bhagavade Rishabhaya Tasmai.
offering respects to Vishwadeva. That stage of bhakti is such, he says here, that Nityanabhuda Nijalaba Nivutta Trishna. The first symptom of such a person that he is free from all desires. Nityanabhuda Nijalaba Nivutta Trishna. That Shabadev was given, Sukadeva Goswami is paying his respects to Shabadev in this way. He says here, Nityanabhuda Nijalaba Nivutta Trishna. What does it mean? That first thing he says there, that Nivrutta Trishna, Trishna means desires. First thing, no desires at all. He has come to that stage. Who? Vrishabhadeva. Absolutely free from all kinds of desires. Then, what else? He says that the attachment to the body has completely gone away from him. Nityanya Bodham. In other words, he is completely absorbed in the soul, not in the body anymore. And, strictly, this is spoken for us also in the sense that in reality, as we saw in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna spoke about in the second chapter, Nasade vidyade bhavo, na bhavo vidyade sadha, ubhayorami krishnavandam stareyo tatu darshimi. People who have realized, they have only realized one thing. What is that? What is real will exist ever, always. And what's not real is never going to exist forever. This point, what Krishna has spoken in that verse, is the very key words of the Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya words, philosophy. This is that key words. And it is the same verse which was expanded by Kapila Muni in Srimad Bhagavatam in the third canto. That's the importance of that verse. If you remember, I mentioned many times before about this verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Nasade vidyade bhavo, na bhavo vidyade sada. Ubhayavarami drishtvandam sarayo tatu darshini. It's an important verse to reflect upon again and again. What is real, what is real, what exists, really exists, will always exist. What really existing will always exist. What does not exist ever, always, has no permanent existence. It looks like a very interesting statement, isn't it? That to show that eternity is only in relationship with the soul. So in other words, body, mind, senses, intelligence, all these kind of things, they come and they go. They haven't got any permanent existence. So they are not permanent and they are not to be taken very seriously. This is what Krishna is saying in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So the person that the only thing what we all can say is permanent in us is what? Is the soul. And that soul is what we experience in the form that I exist. Isn't it? That consciousness or bhodham, aham bhodham, not aham bhavam, but aham bhodham, not ahangaram, but aham bhodham. That bhodham, consciousness, I exist. Is that coming from the soul? Because as we spoke about this before also, Jagranam, Satnam, Sushupti, in all these three states, I exist. Body goes immediately when you go to the dream state. Mind goes immediately going to the Sushupti state. But they are all coming and going, coming and going. So Krishna's point is this, that if you, from this analysis of three states of existence, you can see that the only thing what is true in all these things is me. My consciousness, I am existing. All other things are coming, going. When I come to Jagrat, body comes. When I go to a dream, body leaves and mind comes. When I leave the dream and go to Sushupti, body leaves, mind leaves. Then I exist as me. Aha. So, from there you can see that what Krishna's point is that what is truth in all these things is only this aham bhodam. I am consciousness is the only thing what is existing. So, the soul, when it is understood in that way in Shastram, it is called as Pratyagatma. Pratyagatma means that in Upanishads that is how the word is used. Pratyagatma means the consciousness, understanding of aham bhavam, the soul in that form as aham, in the form of this understanding. Then, and when one shifts one attention from outside towards that, that's the beginning of spiritual life, as far as Krishna is concerned. When one shifts
one attention from outside world towards that soul consciousness inside, then he begins his spiritual life. That so what will happen is Nityani Bhuda Nijalaba Nivutta Trishna. What has happened to Rishabhadev, Parikshit Maharaj, Sudeva Goswami is saying to Parikshit that because he has gone inwards so much, from free from all desires, and started experiencing that soul, what will happen? I mentioned before, this is called bhakti. When you start your take your attention away from the world outside and direct it towards the soul, and it start in the inquiry, little by little, what will happen is a kind of happiness will start coming from the soul. Spiritual happiness will come from that. And when that happiness is coming from outside, Krishna is referring to that particular experience is called bhakti. So shifting attention from outside towards the soul, Krishna present inside a Sandhanyami, that is referred to as the soul. Here there is a lot of things to think about. You see, we will see Krishna as more, our mind normally, tendency is to go towards the deity, isn't it? We start thinking, oh, Krishna is in the temple, I should go and see him. True, it is there. But strictly speaking, even this deity worship is not an old thing. It's a new thing, relatively. This has started only at the end of Trenayugam. Bhagavad Gita mentions that. Only at the end of Trenayugam, this has started. And the reason for starting deity worship was, prior to Trenayugam, people saw in other living entities Krishna's presence. They had that consciousness. That people who lived in Satyugam, they had the very nature that they were able to see in other living entities Krishna's presence. They recognized it very strongly. So their consciousness were more elevated. I will come to that, where it is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. So they were seeing in other people, they saw other people as part and parcel of Krishna. In other words, the realization was so high, there was no need for a deity worship separately. But in due course, by end of Trayayugam, what happened was, people's consciousness have fallen. And they started quarreling each other. Everyone started fighting, quarreling each other. So the sages, what they did, they introduced this deity worship. Brought the deity worship in. And by introducing the deity worship, what they made was that by focusing everything on the deity, at least deity won't fight with you. Whereas if you start developing relationship with other people, maybe there will be fight. So some disagreement and quarrel and fight will start. So, and it got worse and worse. Now even deity worship is not possible. We need something else than that. So it has come to that stage with the advancement of our Kali Yuga. So, this is how our consciousness gradually decreased from its purity to the lower levels. So, as we go down like this, we need deity worship. Now, even deity worship, whether we are questioning, is it necessary or not? So, all these questions have come because of that. So, if you look into Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find there that when Krishna talked about this also, that Brahmamuda state is a state in between, like our Rishabhadev's case. Brahmamuda prasannatma na shojadi na kamshadi samasaveshu bhuneshu manbhaktim levane vayam. So he has already reached that Brahmamuda state, but at the same time he was in bliss. Who? Rishabhadev was in bliss. That's what he is saying here. Shrayasi dadrajaya jira supta buddhehe. That Lobasaya Karnaya Abhayam Atmanogam Akhyanamo Bhagavade Shamaya Tasmai. Rishabhadev, what he did was, when he came to this Brahmabuddha state and he started experiencing bhakti, it was at that stage Rishabhadev was experiencing bhakti. And it is at that stage he was instructing his 100 children, the famous instructions in the Srimad Bhagavatam from a king to his sons. If you remember that, 100 sons were called in. And Bharata was the eldest of them, 100 children. And all of them were instructed about spiritual life by Rishabhadev. Why? At that point, Rishabhadev was in the state of this bhakti state.
Yes, we gone beyond the Brahmabuddha state and he was experiencing the blissful state of bhakti. So in that bhakti state he instructed, and you can see the result, what happened. Out of the 100 children, Bharata Maharaj's story you know, how he took over the responsibility of the administration after that, because that responsibility was given to him by Yashodev, so he became the king or the emperor of the whole planet, and by whose name Bharatavarsham name later came. So, and that Bharata later, after giving up his emperor's duties, he went to the Gandaki River, executed their spiritual life, eventually fell down, became a deer, and then in the next life he became a brahmana, and eventually he went back to the spiritual world. So that was one of the sons of Rishabhadev. Then another 9 much powerful yogis, Kavi Hari Andariksha Prabuddha Pipalayan, Avihotal Dhruvana Chamsa Karabhaja. The 9 yogis have come from Rishabhadev. And another 81 of them has become the Karma Vishuddhi Brahmana. They were Brahmanas who were capable of executing any sacrifices properly. And others became the kings. So like this, all of them, the children of Rishabhadev, we are finding difficulty to get one of our children right. Rishabhadev managed to make all his 100 right. So where is the problem? How long is it that? We are thinking all the time, oh, my son or my daughter is not acting, not becoming a devotee, not chanting the holy name, not doing this, not doing that. So many complaints for us. Why? Because we are not Rishabhadev. And that is the problem. So Rishabhadev managed to do that. All his 100 children took to spiritual life, not only took to spiritual life, all of them became extremely powerful in spiritual life, and you can see what they have done. The 9 yogis, they did the greatest, tremendous job in instructing Nimi Maharaj, and Narada Maharshi quotes them while talking to Asdev and Devaki in the Adarsham in the beginning. And similarly, Bhagavad Maharaj's story, as you know, he had to give up his, he wanted to, at the end of his life, he threw the whole planet away and went back to Gandaki River to execute the penances, and there he sat down, and somehow or the other, due to some prarabdham inside, which developed in the form of vasana, he had to eventually, just to show the strength of prarabdham, that prarabdham caught him at that time, and he felt that compassion for the deer, and the result was that he had to accept the deer's body. But because of all the spiritual activities he has performed, and had a great personality like Rishabhadev as his father, that has followed him, and that knowledge followed him. So even in the deer body, he was still conscious of who he was. That's what Krishna's mercy. And that part in the Srimad Bhagavatam is extremely inspiring to read, because there he says how he was living as a deer. And then in the next body again, after giving up the very place where he got that body, he gave up the body at the same place, in the Gandaki River. And after that, again he takes the birth of a brahmana, and this whole history of 2 lifetimes is following him. I was the king of the, I was Bharata, emperor Bharata at one stage, and then I got, became a body of a deer, and I am here in the form of this brahmana's body. And you can know, that's how he was called as Jadabharata, isn't it? So Jadabharata's story goes a way back. And it's also to show us that how, when strong vasanas are created inside, that will also follow you in the same way. So now coming back to this, that Nityani Rupa Nijalava Nivurta Krishna Prashraya Siladrajaya Chirasutta Buddhehe. Then Chirasutta Buddhehe. Sutta Buddhehe means the human society in this world who is completely indifferent to spiritual life. In other words, completely absorbed in the body, absorbed in the mind and sense enjoyment. This is called that. Chirasutta Buddhehe, because of the thoughts of the body, that they have no desire to enjoy the soul. They have no desire to enjoy the soul. So Sukadeva Goswami is talking about it. So it's a very serious thing. That he is referring to us, all of us, and saying that because of their absorption in the body, it is not easy to wake up into desire, create desire in a person to go into the spiritual path. The first thing you will ask, what do I get? If I go into spiritual life, what do I get? They will ask this question. Isn't it? So, we are people who want to get something, only then we are willing to do anything. So there itself our main problem begins. So Krishna is, Sudeva Goswami is saying here, Nityayane Bhuda Nijalabha Nivrutta Trishna, that he has already given up completely, desires have gone away, it is no vasanas inside. Completely vasanas have gone. Vasana Chayam, the Jnanis call it as Vasana Chayam. It's completely liquidated from inside. The result of that is, the pure bhakti has developed already. The result of that is what's happening to him now is that he's experiencing the soul. From there, develop this pure bhakti. With the result of Shreyasya Dandrajanaya Chirasupta Buddhi. So, he felt compassion for those who are not experiencing that bliss what he was experiencing. So he started, wanted to give instructions to them. That, and therefore, he instructed Atmatattva. Atmatattva means the science of the soul, the knowledge of the soul, he instructed. And to that Rishabhadev, our Sudeva Goswami says, Akhyan namo bhagavate shabaya tasmai. To that Rishabhadev, I pay my obeisances. Sudeva Goswami is paying his obeisances to Rishabhadev. That, so you can see, that when people come to spiritual life, and rarely you will find this, there will be great jnanis will come out from societies, different societies. When the jnanis come out, we may not notice them, because we don't have that clarity or understanding in us to see that in people, that how, what a way, we, our materialistic thinking and materialistic mind gives us different impressions about others. But Rishabhadev himself was a perfect example of that. That most of the people who saw him thought that he was a mad person. And they were throwing stones at him. Same thing they did with Dharmaraj also. When he was in Janaparada's body, how others exploited him to carry the palanquin for Ahugana. And all that story you know in the Bhagavatam. So what important point what Sudeva Goswami is saying here is that Jnani is like that. Jnani is very difficult to identify them, who is the Jnani is. Because the very fact that they have turned their attention inwards, sometimes we may not recognize them. And sometimes even after come to the realized state, they may have experience. Because they had some bhogam. Bhogam means sense enjoyment in the past. Sometimes you may see, even in the realized state, they may engage in sense gratification. They may engage in sense gratification. It can happen to sometimes in the case of jnanis. But in Yoga Vasishtham, that is the book, the literature where Vasishtha Maharshi instructs Ramachandra about this. Ramachandra asks all these questions to Vasishtha. Vasishtha was their spiritual teacher. So Vasishtha instructs Ramachandra that jnanis are like that. That sometimes even after realizations, they may still sometimes appear as though they are engaged in sense enjoyment. Some appearance, they appear to do like that. But ones who have started experiencing this happiness of the soul continuously without any more disturbances, that person is called liberated soul in this world. Jivan Mukta. He's already liberated here. Then his life is different than the others. The difference between him and the previous group is this, that the other group only comes, experiences sometime and comes back from that, and at the same time there are a lot of bhogavasanas inside to sense enjoyment. And even while situated in the spiritual experiences, he may still appear to be enjoying senses also. But the second personality, Jivan Mukta, as they are called the liberated person, is that one who is already completely fixed up in that point. There will be no more coming back from there. For him, it's only a time to leave this body. He waiting for his prarabdham to finish and then to leave this body and go back to the spiritual world. That's what Krishna is saying as the liberated soul. You will find there that this fine thing what you find, the Jivan Mukta or fully liberated soul who is experiencing that bliss, that experience, this ordinarily realized soul may not have it, may not get it. Because it's a step below than that. That's what. In the Bhagavad Gita, if you look into it, you will find there that, I think it is the verse number, third chapter, verse 17 and 18. Krishna is saying there that you have to connect always Bhagavad Gita with Srimad Bhagavatam, because It's the same topic discussed with two different people. So, in the second chapter, in the third chapter, Krishna says there, yes, to atmayadir evasyal, atmatruptascha manava, atman evasya sambhushta stasya gayam namidyare. If you look into the third chapter, verse number 17, I'll read the translation. One who is, however, taking pleasure in the self, who is illumined in the self, who rejoices in and is satisfied with the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. Krishna says that once you come to that state, there is no more duty anymore. There is no such thing called duty. There is no karma for that person. So Krishna says, this isn't Kama Yoga, means Krishna is talking about it. Yes, to atmaradim evasya, atmaradim. Atmaradim means completely absorbed in the soul and enjoying the soul. We may ask the question, how do we enjoy the soul? That question will come straight away, isn't it? So that's what this science of Krishna consciousness is all about. Atmaradim evasya, atmatruptascha manava. And not only he is enjoying the soul, he is completely atmatrupta, self-illuminated. And atmanyevaja sandushta tasya gayamna vidyade. He is happy being the self. Within being the self, he is satisfied within that position. So, the important thing is that when we are talking about the soul, we have to look at all these things also from that viewpoint. Because although soul is not understood, as Krishna said in the beginning, in the second chapter, Krishna said that, isn't it? How did Krishna say? Krishna says, Ashcharyaval Pashyati Kashchidenam. Some people are saying that the soul is a wonderful thing. And some people are saying that they have heard about it, but they don't understand it. Somebody else is saying, people have discovered about it, but I have not understood that. There is a verse in the second chapter, isn't it? Do you remember? Ashcharyaval Pashyati Kashchidenam. Ashcharyaval. when Krishna started talking about the soul, that is how he explained it to Arjuna. And at the end, Krishna said, Ashyadeval Paschari Kashirenam, Ashyadeval Vadadi, Tadaiva Janya, Ashyadeval Chayam, Anyam Shunodi, Shutva Apenam, Vedana Chayva Kashir. That is the words. That some look on the soul as amazing, some describe him as amazing, and some hear of him as amazing, while others, even after hearing about him, cannot understand him at all. So there, in the second chapter itself, Krishna spoke about the soul in that way. And now Krishna is saying, in the very third chapter, Krishna is saying there, that yastu atmaradir eva syal, atmadruptascha manava, atman evaja sandushta tasya gayamna vidyade. Once you have reached soul, once you have come to that realization that I am soul, not this body anymore, what will happen to that person is that he takes pleasure in the self. And who is illumined in the self, rejoices in and is satisfied with the self only. He does not want anything after that to enjoy. So this is the important point here, that the soul is an experience, or consciousness as we refer to as the soul. It is something, once you have experienced it, then only you can say that this is something I don't want to miss, I lose it again. So that way it goes increasing, and eventually when one has reached that state of consciousness, that he is liberated. It's called a Jivan Mukta state. Therefore there is no more body after that. So in the very next verse also, Krishna says here, Naiva Sikhdena Tho Nagrudene Hakashana Najasya Sarva Bhudeshu Kashirata Vipashrayaham. Such a self-realized soul, Krishna says in this chapter, self-realized soul has no purpose to fulfill. He has no duty. We, in the bodily concept of life, we think we have a lot of responsibility in this world, isn't it? And some people, they get affected. Why do we have to read these things? The reason is this. If you look through these verses and look at the world, you can see what level different people are on a spiritual platform. Strictly speaking, sometimes you see big leaders in this world, at the old days, 75, 80, 85,
They are still working in this world, trying to change this world, and they think if they move away from the world, this world is going to serious problems. Some of the leaders have this thinking. That's why you can see many, many countries, people are in power at the age of 80, 85, 90, you know, they hold on to it. And they feel that they have their responsibility, they feel very strongly in this world to sit. Even the age of 80, when the body has already started giving serious problems, still they are thinking, oh, I have a lot of responsibility here to execute. Isn't it? And it happens to all of us in different levels, that's all. Only thing takes our attention to them because they are world leaders. So we feel that we take notice of it. Especially in India, this is very strong because how many politicians are all 80 plus working still? And what for they are working at? Don't they understand why they are doing this? If you ask them, they also don't know why they are. But they still feel that they have to be there doing this. So this difficulty is there, and it is there in other places also, but in a different degree. But what I was saying was that once the spiritual knowledge and spiritual realization comes, all these kind of obligations, this kind of duties, this kind of commitments will go straight away. That's what Krishna is saying here in this third chapter. Naiva tasya kritena artho nagritena eha kaschana. A self-realized soul has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties, nor has he any reason not to perform such work. Now, just because it says here, okay, sometimes you may find them doing some work, but don't misunderstand that all these big leaders are realized, but they are doing the work still. They are not doing in that mood, definitely not. Nor has he any need to depend on any other living being. So, na jasya sarvabhudeshu kashir artha vibhashraya, Krishna says. So, in those two verses in the Kama Yoga chapter, Krishna spoke about this, that the person who has reached that stage of realization is like that. That is what Krishna is pointing out here. That, why are we discussing all these things? We are discussing because Acharyoranayadhyasyal Andevasuttara Varani Talsandhanam Pravachanam Vidyasandhi Sukhavaha. If you remember, when Acharya and the Shishya, the spiritual master and the disciple meet together, from there what will happen is this. This has to happen. And if this doesn't happen, then that meeting has not shown its benefit. It does not create it, what it is meant to create. So that's what he said here. Acharyurani adhyasyal andeva sutararani talsandhanam pravachanam vidyasandhi sukhavaha. Vidya or knowledge will come from that relationship with the discussion between the spiritual master and the disciple. The spiritual master's responsibility to drag the disciple out of this ignorance and put him into that situation. So for that we have spoken many things, what Krishna expects from a disciple, what Krishna expects from a spiritual master. So when we talk all these things, once it so happened, a great personality was talking about these two people, about what Krishna has spoken here. So, the people who were listening, they were completely new to spiritual life. They had no idea about spiritual life. They were so absorbed in the body and living a comfortable bodily construct of life. Let me put it that way. So, they, after hearing all these things, they decided to ask a question to this sannyasi. They asked him like this. They said that you have spoken about the soul, glorifying it so much. And you also spoke in depth a lot about karma, jnanam, bhakti and all that. So much we heard from you about all these things from the Bhagavad Gita. Are you trying to hypnotize us? This was the question they raised. Because they said, Swamiji, are you trying to hypnotize us? Swamiji said to them, the answer is more interesting than the question. He said to them, actually, you are already in the hypnotized state. I am trying to dehypnotize you from what you are in. That's what he answered. Is it not the truth? We, absorbed in the body, in the mind, in intelligence, in the senses, we are actually in a hypnotized state.
we are not recognizing it. That is the biggest problem with us. We are thinking that we are in the real state, in the real world we are living, with the real mind, the real intelligence, the real consciousness. But what Krishna is saying here is that your so-called real is all unreal. So-called things, what we call as real, is all unreal. And you have accepted all these things as real, and foolishly you are continuing with this understanding in your whole lifetime. So basically what Krishna is doing here is, he is dehypnotizing us from our hypnotism, or hypnotized state. We are actually in a hypnotized state, because I have accepted this body as me, I have accepted the mind, intelligence, senses as me, and I am living in this life, completely satisfied with what is going on. So, from this state of consciousness, this sleep, we were sleeping in this state for a very, very, very long period of time. We are like this. Sometimes when you read the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, you will notice that there is certain living entities in the hellish planets. How they live? They live such a life, they don't want any light. In darkness they live, completely in darkness. And most of the time they are sleeping. Most of the time they are sleeping. And there is no opportunity for them to develop any other higher consciousness. But they are satisfied in that situation. So, although they are on a much lower level, satisfied in that state, and they have no desire to go higher and to wake up from this sleep, we also are very closer to that. We are not much far away from that. That in our own, this present state, how much do we desire really to get out of this? Most of us don't. Because we, for the moment we are concerned, we are very happy in what we are today. And therefore, this difficulty is not only in our level, it's in all levels. When you go, the only difference is that in the other bodies, this thought even won't happen. To such an extent, it is suppressed inside. That in the Bhagavatam, you can read in the fifth canto, when you read, especially in the lower planetary systems, there is a statement there, that some of the living entities, they have been living there for such a very long time, never seen the light. And they live there in that condition for don't know how long they have to stay in that state. And imagine that there is no possibility of sunlight, there is no possibility of any knowledge, and there is no higher understanding of anything, just living. Just living. And if we also fall into the same category without much difference from our side, that's where spiritual knowledge and spiritual realizations are important. Spiritual realization is to get out of this state of existence and think, and they also have got the soul. All these living entities we are talking about in the Balalokam, they also have the soul. But they cannot experience that happiness of the soul. Rather, totally absorbed in the body and living in that state. So, here, what Krishna is saying here is that this is talsandhanam pravajanam. That through that talsandhanam, through that juncture, or through that interaction between the spiritual master and the disciple, what will happen is vidya sandhi sukhava. Vidya or knowledge will develop in a person. Must develop in a person. That what will happen when he has vidya or knowledge inside, he will realize that I am not in any of these things. What I have thought I am. That means the body, the mind, the senses. This ignorance will go away from that person. That he will have the complete realization that I am soul. That will happen to him. Although we may talk all these things now, it will all remain, it just remain in the air. Nothing is experienced, isn't it? So that's why it is said, even though you may not experience it today, at least if the thoughts are developing inside, that itself is a great success. That itself is considered to be beneficial. So, because, why it says in the Bhagavatam, you will see that later mentioned, that once you start developing this intelligence, to see through things in this way, that this, I have trusted myself to be the body, mind, intelligence, senses and all that, at least now I can understand that I am not any of these things. if at least that thought has come, that kind of intelligence is called Vaisharadi Buddhi. Krishna gives a special name to it, Vaisharadi Buddhi. So that is what Vaisharadi Buddhi does. What will Vaisharadi Buddhi do? Krishna says in the verse 13. You will see there. Vaisharadi Sadhi Vishuddha Buddhi Duno Divayam Gunasam Prasudam Gunamsya Sandahi Edalma Vedal Swayam Jashamit Asamit Yadha Arjuni. That is a beautiful verse in the Bhagavad. Vaisharadi Sadhi Vishuddha Buddhi. The Buddhi or his intelligence is now pure. Krishna says, why does he say like that? Why is the intelligence pure? Is the intelligence not pure for all the big scientists and the scholars and all that? Is the intelligence not pure? Because we say, oh, he's highly intelligent, isn't it? We say like that about many, many great personalities we refer to. No. From Krishna's point is, their intelligence is polluted. It's not pure. Vaisharadi sadhu vishuddha buddhir dhunodhimayam gunasam prasudam. What will happen is, if Vaisharadi buddhi comes to a person, maya will withdraw from him. Maya will withdraw from him. Duno dimayam guna samprasodam. Maya means, you know what we are referring to maya. Maya means three modes of material nature. Sattva, Rajasa and Tamasa. These three things will withdraw from that person. Guno omshi sandahe yadhalma medhal swayam jashamyat asamil yadha agni. That the three gunas which have been controlling him pulls away from him. Once the gunas pulls out from a person, what will happen? The spiritual soul will come out in its pure form. It will start fire, like a fire it will burn. That person will burn like a fire. And that's why all the great jnanis, all great realized souls, when they have come out of maya, their activities are all in bliss. For an external person, well, who is in maya, it will appear as though he is not doing things right. Everything looks awkward to him, his activities. But for that person who is freed from maya, his activities, Krishna says, gunomsya sandhakeda alpamedal. It's all on a completely on a spiritually realized state. Therefore, soyam yashamyad yasamed yadha agni. That the fire that has developed inside in the form of realization, that fire has started burning. And in that fire, everything got burned. What did get burned? All the doubts, all kinds of misconceptions, all kinds of desires, all kinds of things what are in us today, all gets burned in that knowledge, the fire of knowledge. Ejam jashamyat asamyat yatha agni. And the Krishna is comparing that, just like the wood caught the fire, and the fire started burning. Eventually the fire goes away and the wood also goes away. It all turns into ashes and wood has disappeared. Fire also goes away. Similarly, for the self-realized soul also, that the realization starts coming. Eventually the fire starts building up after this discussion with the spiritual master and the disciple. That vidyasandhi sukhavaha. The knowledge has gone inside and the knowledge has caught on fire and it started burning inside. Eventually in the fire of knowledge, everything burns. Everything burns means all these anathas inside, like the doubts, misconceptions, desires, everything gets burned and eventually they also go away and this knowledge also burns, goes away. In the goes away means that he has reached that state, he doesn't need it anymore. Just like when we talk about Bhagavad Gita, this is what, coming to this point, we should study Bhagavad Gita in such a way that at one point we have to be able to throw away Bhagavad Gita, what we have. Why Bhagavad Gita should become our path? The knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita should capture us. Four kinds of people I mentioned before who takes to studying Bhagavad Gita. If you remember when we talked about Bhagavad Gita, it's mentioned in this. There are four classes of people who comes to Bhagavad Gita. The first one is the one who wants to study Bhagavad Gita from a historic point of view, like the historians. Historians study Bhagavad Gita, how do they study? They study Bhagavad Gita, they want to find out how many years ago Bhagavad Gita was written, and where was it written,
who wrote it, who spoke, and they want to know the exact location where it was written. Like that, their interest is in that direction. And they want to establish something, whatever they want to. That's what they have done in the Bhutra history. So they will study, from a history point of view, they will study Bhagavad Gita in that way. Isn't it? That's one group of people in this world. You'll find them. They are the people who have done research into Oriental philosophy and all kinds of things. And they'll produce some papers, get a PhD, and then they'll get a job somewhere as a professor. And then he will, that paper will be read by many other fools like the same way. And they will go on like this, one another. Bhagavad Gita is not for research work, firstly. And Bhagavad Gita, if you start doing research on Bhagavad Gita, you won't get it anywhere with Bhagavad Gita. You will not get it anywhere in Bhagavad Gita with the research work. So this is one class of people who studies Bhagavad Gita in that way. Basically for their livelihood. Secondly, there is another kind of people. These are people who are very highly scholarly people, experts in the Shastra. What they do is, they will study Bhagavad Gita, each verse they will take in the Bhagavad Gita and start analyzing word by word and check why Krishna has used this word here, not the other word, or the grammar, the grammatical approach, whether the grammar is right, what Krishna has used, this kind of thing. They have a particular attraction for the researcher. So they study Bhagavad Gita from a literary point of view. My people study Bhagavatam also in the same way, because Bhagavatam is a beautiful literature as well. So they study Bhagavad Gita in that direction. So there's another class of people. Then there is another group, which is a very interesting group. These are the people, what they do is, they'll bring Bhagavad Gita, they'll nicely cover it with a nice cloth, everything, keep it in the puja room in the house, and every day they will offer arati to Bhagavad Gita and sing. There is an arati song for Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? They'll sing that and offer some flowers and incense and whatever it is. And then what they'll do, if you tell them, look, give the Jayanti day, they will take it, open it, and read one or two chapters from that. Sometimes a little bit more than that. And after that, they'll cover it nicely with the same cloth and put it back in the same position. And these people, if you tell them, look, have you read Bhagavad Gita, have you read this thing in the Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna says, or anything, if you start opening a discussion with them, what they'll tell you is, oh, I don't have so much time for all that. We are people who have got a lot of family life to look after. And they have a lot of respect for Bhagavad Gita, but they won't spend any time in reading it or understanding it properly. They say they don't have the time, but they have a lot of reverence towards Bhagavad Gita. So they will keep it in that cloth covered nicely for the whole life, and they'll go like that. This is one group like that. And there is a fourth one, who is people who study Bhagavad Gita with the full desire to understand the message from Krishna. These are called the people who have the desire to understand Bhagavad Gita in the Tattvam, or the Tattvam, Bhagavad Tattvam, or principle, what Krishna has talked about in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna's words, understanding it and deeply reflecting on it. This is the fourth group of people. So from all these four classes of people, you can see they are all coming to Bhagavad Gita for some reason or the other. So here, this Vaisharadi Buddhi is that what we are talking about. Vaisharadi Sati Vishuddha Buddhaya. Only one whose mind is free from all other kinds of intelligence, he can enter into Bhagavad Gita properly and start thinking about it. So thoughts will develop only at that stage. Krishna is saying there. Then, so this Vaisharadi Buddhi, what is Krishna is saying there? Krishna said, just like the fire got extinguished itself, similarly, Krishna says here, this eventually, that self-realization alone will burn that fire alone will burn the whole thing. And once you become self-realized, all other different doubts, nowadays we ask questions, isn't it? All the time we are asking questions. Is this right? Is that right? What's the right thing to do? But Krishna is saying, if you realize the self, these questions won't even come. Questions are coming because there is no realization. That's Krishna's point. So, therefore, he talks about it like this, that when the intelligence Vaisharadi buddhi means intelligence. When buddhi goes outwards and starts absorbed in the world outside, that's called, that buddhi is called avidya, ignorance. When the buddhi goes outside and starts taking interest in the world outside and searching for the knowledge of the outside world, that is called avidya. Krishna is talking about that later. That this intelligence is a great intelligence everybody has, and intelligence is a great creation of Krishna, the soul's creation. Intelligence is a much great creation of the soul. And if that's it, when it is going and taking shelter in the external objects, you can take it that it is in the grip of ignorance, avidya shakti. There are two shakti, avidya and vidya. When it goes and takes shelter outside in the external objects, you can take it, it is in the grip of avidya, in the grip of avidya, ignorance. So therefore, what will happen is, some people have a higher intelligence. When it goes outside and start taking interest in the objects outside, it will start growing. All the scientific discoveries are the result of that. What we see as scientific discoveries, what we call in this world, is a result of allowing your intelligence to go outwardly and taking shelter or taking utilizing intelligence to study the objects outside. When the same intelligence leaves that and go towards the soul, leaving everything outside, that is called Vaisharadi Buddhi. Vaisharadi Buddhi is that buddhi when the intelligence leaves everything outside and simply goes after the soul and trying to understand and go towards the self-realization. That is why it is called the reason why sometimes you find these great discoveries happening with people is that their intelligence is there, but that intelligence starts growing when it comes into contact with certain objects in this world. And sometimes that can develop to such higher levels, they develop great capacity. In the Shastram all this is discussed. They are called Ashtavadhani, Shatavadhani and all that. So Ashtavadhani means one who can do 8 or 10 things at the same time. Their intelligence has developed like that. That they have the capacity to do many things at the same time. This is a special capacity. Shatavadhani, one who can do hundreds of things at a same time. So even among realized souls also, you will find that this intelligence, when it develops to a higher level, it develops different capacities as well in that way. There was one person who has this nature and he could do many things at the same time. Many things at the same time. He was not getting disturbed over it. For us also it's difficult, isn't it? Many things at the same time to do. But Ashtavadhani means one who can do many things at the same time. And there was another person, he was so inward looking, his intelligence, that he couldn't do 2 things at the same time. For example, when you do deity worship, if you want to ring the bell and show the lamp, he couldn't do it. Either he could ring the bell or he could show the lamp. It has come to that stage for him. Why? Because it has become his habit that nothing in the world outside is inward drawn to such an extent, drawn inwards, for after the soul. So this quality, when we see in this world, when somebody is extraordinarily brilliant in intelligence in the material life or in the discoveries of this world, material discoveries, although the society glorifies them for their achievements and all that, for intelligence, from the spiritual point of view, it is not a very nice thing to be like that, because its mind is, intelligence is completely in the external world. The self, when it is extroverted, that is the mind. When the mind, when it is introverted, that is the soul. This is how that relationship is. That the soul is realized when the mind has completely blocked the world and it has gone inwards looking for it. And similarly, the soul, when it goes outside, trying to find some pleasures or happiness in this world, then it becomes the mind. So, soul and the mind, they are one and the same. That is the reason why, in Shastram, often you will see the same word Atma used for the mind, Atma used for the soul, Atma used for the body, Atma used for the intelligence. As far as if from a spiritual platform, this body, this mind, this intelligence, all this has come from the soul is the reality, not the body, not the mind, not the intelligence. They are completely rejected. So therefore, although the word Atma is used in all circumstances to identify mind, body and all, reason for that is that the mind, which is when the self has come out, it is the mind. When the mind has gone in, it is the self. But originally it is the self, not the mind. So because it is the self who has come out and inquiring outside in the world, it's called the mind. And because it engages its energy in developing the world outside, it's called intelligence. And because it's trying to enjoy the senses, sense objects, it's called the senses. And because it is trying to identify, I am the doer and I am the enjoyer, it's the body. But truly we are the self, none of these. So this is the most important thing, that as we, this Jnana Yoga, particularly in the Srimad Bhagavatam, is discussed quite a bit. But in the Upanishads and all, they will regularly, the Acharya is supposed to teach the disciple all the time, that to bring him out from this bodily identity and to bring him to the spiritual consciousness or spiritual realization, it is important to talk about it from all angles. From all angles. That so therefore sometimes it happens that people have a lot of capacity to do many things, but they will use in the wrong way. This is the problem with all of us. Not that we don't have the capacity to do. We start thinking, oh, I don't have the capacity. No, we have the capacity. Only thing is, we use in the wrong way, in the wrong place. Once it so happened in an ashram, a lady who was very good in painting, in artwork, she had always a desire to paint things and draw pictures of different objects. So what she did was, with a few color powder, she started drawing a picture of a peacock. She was drawing the picture of a peacock. She drew the picture so well that a peacock which was passing through in the ashram saw the picture and stood there and started looking at it. So powerful was that capacity of her. Her concentration was so good. That she could draw the picture of the peacock in such a way that even the peacock got attracted to it. And peacock was looking at it. So when she did like that, at the same time, a sannyasi was passing through that nearby. So he observed both the peacock as well as the lady who was drawing the picture. And he says there that if this kind of concentration what she had, if that was turned inwards, how lies it would have been. She would have realized long ago. But what to do? She won't turn it. What can we do? This was his comment on that. So in other words, because we have turned our attention externally to such a level that everything in the world is attraction for us, and we find that in our life in this world is simply external life, therefore it has become very difficult for us to understand the principles of Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam. This is our main problem. Our mind is constantly, and intelligence is constantly busy with the world outside, with the life outside, activities outside, and therefore whenever we talk about the soul and what Krishna is talking about, very subtle things in the Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, it becomes very, very difficult for us to accept it or to understand it. Now, coming back to this point, that this capacity to go outwardly and to go start studying about the objects outside and to acquire happiness from that, and this mentality to go in that direction, this is called avidya, and that is the power of Maya. So Maya, when Maya wants to engage us, first thing Maya does is pull us outside from inside. and gives us a lot of opportunities to spend your whole lifetime. That's why Maya increases, we start increasing our study of the planet. We'll study the sky, the space, and we'll go studying the sea, the ocean, what is lying at the bottom of the ocean we want to find out. Then we want to find out all the other planets. This is the sign how that Maya develops in a much bigger level. And as it increases, it will keep increasing like the universe. Your inquisitiveness and desire to develop this knowledge of the external world also increases just like universe is increasing in size. So universe increases, your desire is also increasing to increase your knowledge. Like way it goes on and on and on, endless, and one day we drop dead and gone. So Krishna is saying here that the Vilakshana Stula Sushma Dehar Almekshita Sudrak. Unless you have become Sudrak, unless you have come Ichidav, that Stulam and Sushmam will capture you. Stulam means the gross body and Sushmam means the subtle body. If you fall into the grip of Stulam, it's not too bad because Stulam at least one day will drop you. But if you fall into the grip of Sushmam, then you are lost. That is where mind and intelligence will drag you to such levels of activities that you will find it eventually difficult to come out of it. That's why they say that if you have spent a lot of time in the external world with external activities, at the age of 65, 70 and all that, when you start talking to them about the soul, they fall asleep straight away. It's too late because you have absorbed your mind so much in the matter for soul the lifetime. So where is the possibility of understanding Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam at that age? So one has to guard against this. In one instance it so happened that there was a great personality and he used to sit on the banks of the river Kaveri. Nalkira was his name. He was a Siddha in Tamil. So Siddha means he had this great quality of analyzing the self. And he will withdraw from everything, always staying away from the public because he wanted his privacy to keep his mind focused on the truth. And studying Shastram and develop this potency in him very much. That he can very easily, he can withdraw himself from the world. Krishna talks about this in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? In the second chapter, if you remember, that a person who wants to progress in the spiritual path, what does Krishna say? He says, like a tortoise, you should immediately withdraw first thing, withdraw your senses. Kurmanga niva sarvasha. That you will notice the comparison with kurma. Kurma is the tortoise. So this quality of kurma or tortoise is important because it is kurma, this tortoise is teaching us that if there is consciousness, then kurma has all its senses, body is exposed outside. As soon as there is a danger, what does it do? It withdraws inwards. Withdraws inwards. Similarly, a yogi also, Krishna says, that immediately, as you know, senses and sense objects are dangerous because it will create unwanted desires inside and also different thoughts inside, which is going to disturb my process of self-realization. He has to guard against that, so he withdraws inside. So this personality, Nalkira, also was like that. He had studied Bhagavad Gita at such a levels that he would not allow his mind to wander away freely anywhere and everywhere. He will avoid this association of people whom he found are not conducive for spiritual life. Who have no interest in self-realization, he would not even talk to them. He did not want any association. So one occasion, because he had this capacity to withdraw himself inwards, and little by little come out of this identity of mind, body, intelligence, senses and all that. What he used to do, he used to look for lonely places where he could sit and reflect like this. So one instance he was sitting like this on the banks of Kaveri River and reflecting in that way about the truth. And kept on reflecting and reflecting for a long period of time. And it was almost getting very closer to the realized state. They will know it when they have experienced that. And at that point, he saw something very interesting. What was that? A fish jumped out of the river outside and fell onto the land. And half of the fish turned itself into a bird and flew away. And the remaining half fell back into the river again and went out. As soon as he saw this, his whole attraction turned from self-realization to find out how could this happen. You see, that is how sushmam it is. It is such a sushmam thing. Soul is a very sushmam. Sushmam means extremely subtle thing. And we require that ekagrata. Ekagrata means the concentration of the self, in the self. And it requires a lot of effort. But if we allow our mind and intelligence to completely absorb in this world, in all sorts of rubbish things, and then we want some spiritual life also along with that, it's not possible. It is not possible. So this is what has happened to that, what is happening to him. That he, and then with the result was that, it takes a lot of effort then, because then, same thing just like what happened to Jadabharata, isn't it? Jadabharata, when he saw that the deer, the pregnant deer, which was trying to cross the river, when the pregnant deer heard the sound of the lion roaring, she got frightened and she jumped. When she jumped, because of the fear, the pregnancy gone and the baby deer dropped into the water, and mother jumped out to the other side and she died. But the baby is still living, start flowing, coming through the water. So when Jadabharata saw that, he was chanting Gayatri at that time. And in the Gayatri, what was he doing? Savidra Mandala Madhyavarti Narayana. Krishna, who is present in the sun planet as the absolute truth, is worshipping him. From the sun planet Narayana, it came down to the deer flowing through the water. Everything gone. In 1 second, the whole thing gone. So because of that, he had to come back 2 times again, in the form of the deer and the Jadabharata later, before you can go back to spiritual world. So what I'm saying is that in great, great jnanis, great, great devotees, these things have happened in spiritual life. It is not that they could, every time when they go up, there's always fall coming from there in one time or the other. So even after reaching such stages, they experience through these situations in life. So, when we direct our attention from the external world towards the soul, it becomes the Krishna's mystic power, Krishna's opulence. That's Krishna's opulence. Because it's called a vibhuti of Krishna. That this capacity for us to shift our attention from the world outside to the soul inside is one of Krishna's vibhutis. That we must remember that. That when the mind is absorbed, because by now, you are, as Prabhupada calls it as, you are in the control of the internal energy. As long as we are in the control of the external energy, which is called Maya, our intelligence, mind, senses, they all develop. When it comes to the internal energy, mind, intelligence, senses subdues, and the soul, spiritual energy starts developing. So, that is it. Another important point. So, to fall from spiritual life is not very difficult. This is the point. Fall from spiritual life is not very difficult. So, then the question will come, what is Maya? Isn't it? People always ask this question, what is Maya? Maya, simplest definition for Maya is like this. Anything that takes you away from the soul is Maya. Anything that takes you away from the soul is Maya. This is the simplest definition. There are so many other definitions of Maya also. But the simplest definition possible is this. That anything in this world that takes your attention away from the soul is Maya. So, once it so happened that Maya is not something which you can say, oh, this is Maya, that's Maya. Sometimes we can observe that in our daily life also. It so happened that once a great politician came to see a great sage in an ashram. When he came there, he made sure before he came to the ashram that I wanted to come and visit this sage, but I don't want any kind of public propaganda centered around me, because he was a great leader at that time. And he made sure that they don't ask him to make any speech or anything like that when he gets there. So he arranged all that in a proper way. So he doesn't want to be disturbed. He wanted to come see the sage and spend some time with the sage and go away from there. That was his desire. So when he came, along with him, naturally there were other people as well who came with him. Because being a very important personnel in the government, he came with him. So they all came together. They came and sat in front of the sage. The sage was sitting there and they were all sitting there. There was no discussion or anything between the sage as well as between this great leader. They didn't discuss anything. They knew each other that just being in the presence of a great sage, you will experience that change in your mind, in your consciousness. That's a well-known thing. That if you are presence of a great spiritual personality, you will experience that change. The peacefulness that comes from that person or his spiritual potency will have an impact on the person. So this is what was happening. He wanted to experience that, this leader. So he came and sat down and others were also sitting there. And after about a couple of hours, he decided to go back to his work, whatever it was. So he got up and left. When he got up and left, there were many others who were there who did not even come with him. They also got up and left with him. They went back with him. So the sage turned around and said, somebody was asking me about Maya, and this is Maya, he said. That was his answer to that. So Maya is such a thing that it takes you away from the soul to something else. Anything, doesn't matter what it is. That you may have you will not know how Maya tricks us. It can, before you know it, it has done the duty and gone. Done it and left. So there they were sitting all this time, couple of hours there, looking at the sage and experiencing his presence. But in 1 minute, Maya says, now you can go and you have to go. So Maya is that thing which takes our attention away from Krishna. So this beautiful name, Sharada, is given to this energy of Krishna, which is called, and that's why this deity is installed in many places, Sharada Devi, and it's one of the expansions of Yogamaya, what you find in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Grami Shakti, Sharanam. So, so when you are under the influence of Vidya Shakti or knowledge, immediately what will happen is the inquiry will begin very seriously with him. Though Vaisharadi Sadhi Vishuddha Buddher, then Dunodhimayam Gunasam Prasudam, Gunamsha Sandahi Elalpam Enal Soyanja Samyat Asamit Yadhagni. So, if it is that, if this understanding has come to a person, that I am the soul, I am not this body. Krishna is now going to talk about them, something else, that, then, after not only hearing from the spiritual master or the shastra, one also has to oneself analyze in one's own about his body and come to the firm understanding that I am not this body, I am not this mind, and I am not this intelligence, I am not this ego. Then question will come, who am I? Isn't it? Who am I? This question will automatically come to such a person. So that question was answered earlier if you look into the discussion between the Navayogis and the King Nimi. Nimi Navayogi discussions is centered around that. There you will see a personality, I think it was Pipalayana Maharshi who answered that question. We'll just go back to that for a minute before we stop. In the Bhagavatam, in the Ekadasha Skandam, when we look into this chapter of the, I think it is the fourth chapter or fifth chapter, where Pipalayana Maharshi answers, that question was, Pipalayana Vacha. It is in the third chapter, sorry. There we talked about Maya. If you remember, I don't know whether it's all still in your mind or it's all gone. Probably it's gone.
What's the text?
Yeah, it is the Canto 11, Chapter 3, verse number 35. So here we are saying, we talked about Vaisharadi Buddhi and also about the intelligence which has gone outside. They call it as Jada Buddhi, but actually from spiritual point of view, they have no interest in that Buddhi, to tell the truth. The Buddhi which has gone outside and searching, researching and all that, that has no importance from the spiritual point of view. So they are not even given a proper name to it. Jada Buddhi they call it, some people call it as Jada Buddhi, which is absorbed in the Jadam. Jada means matter, in the Jadam, dead matter. So all scientific research is based on that, isn't it? Jada Buddhi. So Vaisharadi Buddhi is that Buddhi which has turned towards the soul. Now we also see that anything that is directing you externally is called Maya. Away from the soul is called Maya. So when the Navayogis have discussed this with the King Nimi, the question came up that I want to know about Maya, the king asked, isn't it? That's the first verse in that chapter. Parasya Vishnu Varishasya Mayinamabhi Mohi Maya Vedin Vichyam Bhagavandho Bhagavandhuna. And that was answered by Andarisha. This one of the sages, Andarisha, answered that question, what is Maya? That was all spoken there. And then, after that, in the same chapter you will say, then that your true nature is soul, that was discussed. So at that time, King Nimi wanted to understand who is this soul? Who is this soul? Who is the soul? That was the question, isn't it? So, iti bhagavadan dhamman shikshan bhaktya taduthaya narayana varo maya anjastarati dustayam. That this super soul inside us, the super soul inside us, who is referred to as Narayana. Super soul is referred to as Narayana. That is the verse number 33 in the chapter. Iti bhagavadan dhamman shikshan bhaktya taduthaya Narayana varo maya anjastarati dustaram. That how do we that by executing Bhagavata Dharma, by executing Krishna consciousness, that due to that Bhagavata Dharma, bhakti develops inside a person. And when bhakti develops, he crosses over Maya. So Maya, normally Maya's responsibility is to pull us outward, from inside to pull us outward. So how do we get out of that situation? It says here that execute Bhagavata Dharma, which we discussed before. Kavi, Hari and all, they spoke about Bhagavata Dharma. We will not go back to that. But simply if you understand, Bhagavata Dharma means Krishna consciousness. If you execute Krishna consciousness, what will happen is, because of the bhakti, what will happen is, you will cross over Maya. Maya will not touch you and you will turn inwards. Our vision will start looking inwards. So at that time, you will cross over Maya, said Andarisha to King Nimi. So the King Nimi is asking that question, that when you turn inwards, you told that there is Narayana, Krishna inside. Can you explain to us about him? That is how that question came up. Do you remember this? That when we discussed that chapter, one by one, nine yogis answered nine questions. The king had nine questions. And all the nine yogis answered one question each. Isn't it? Bhagavata Dharmam. What is Bhagavata Dharmam? First question from King Nimi. Kavi answered that question. What are the symptoms of a devotee? Hari answered that question. What is Maya? Andarisha answered that question. How to cross over Maya? Pipalaya answered that question. Kavi, Hari, Andarisha. Sorry, Prabhuda answered that question. Now, what is Narayana? God? That question was asked and Pipalaya is answering that question. So here, you will see a
perfect description of what is Krishna. And this description in the Bhagavatam is a very important description, because if we have misunderstood Krishna, that Krishna is only present in the deity, not anywhere else, you will see here, while referring to Krishna, how Pipalayana Maharshi puts Krishna forward. Read those verses. Stick Nara Rajavacha. King is saying, Narayana Bhidanasya Brahmana Paramalpana Nishta Avakalanovatam Yuyam Ti Brahmavitamam. That Narayana, by that name, the Super Soul, I will explain, I would like to know about it, because you are already realized Narayana. Please talk to us about him. He says, in answer to that, Pipalayana is going to now discuss about the absolute truth as he has experienced. So, what we were talking about here is that this coming verses now in this chapter will present to us how to understand Krishna. This is important. How to understand Krishna. This understanding of Krishna is important, because when we come to Srimad Bhagavatam, and Srimad Bhagavatam is opening up our understanding of the soul as well as Krishna together, we will understand that when we keep saying in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna spoke about the soul, we started seeing Krishna as separate from the soul. We were thinking that there is something called the soul inside. We were not able to connect soul and Krishna together. But in these verses you will see that soul Krishna was talking about in the second chapter is nobody else than Krishna. It is Krishna's Param Parsal who is sitting there, and that's what we will be discussing next Sunday. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
जगद्गुरु श्रील प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की।